I'm Jeb Sharp, and this is The World. British journalist Gary Young's new book is based on a simple, tragic statistic. Every day, on average, 7 children and teens are shot dead in the US.
Most of these stories don't even really make the local news beyond 500 words, sometimes if that.
So Young picked a day at random, November 23rd, 2013. 10 American children and teens died in gunfire that day. Young set out to learn each of their stories. One of the lives he traced was that of 16-year-old Edwin Rajo of Houston. He was a boisterous, almost silly kid in a rough high school. His mother, Marlene, was born in Honduras. She hid in the driver's cab of an 18-wheeler with 8 other people to make her way to the U.S. Marlene speaks almost no English, so Young says it was especially hard for her when she got called in to talk to administrators at Edwin's high school.
Edwin is always in and out of the behavioral office for kind of minor but persistent infractions, really. He just can't settle down. One of the teachers said he wasn't a bad kid, he was just busy. And he's the oldest son, and his mother keeps being called to school, and she would say to him, Edwin, what are you doing to me? You're the oldest, you should be setting an example. And he would promise her, this is not going to happen again. I'm really sorry.
He struggled in a school where these gangs, these black and Latino gangs, had a major presence. Tell us a little bit about Lee High School in Houston and Edwin's life there.
The fact of life in this kind of area of Houston, your relationship to gangs is a bit like people's relationship to the Communist Party in the Soviet Union or the Ba'ath Party in Iraq. Like, if you live in those blocks, you're already gang-related. And Edwin, as far as anybody could tell me, wasn't involved in the gang. He might have wanted to be, but my guess is he'd have been too much of a liability. But I don't even know whether, you know, he really wanted to be. But his friends, some of his friends were in it, and certainly his best friend, Camilla, was involved.
And as you tell us, you write about the high school and the apartment complex and this atmosphere and the gangs. We're almost set up to expect a stereotypical gang death. But that's not quite what happened. Tell us how he died.
He dies in his best friend's bedroom. She has acquired a gun because her brother had been shot at, and there's a guy who's kind of after them and who's talked in social media about coming for them. And so she thinks that it's better that they get one to protect them. And this young woman is like Edwin's protector, and she is involved in the gang. And so they acquire this gun, and she keeps it under her bed. And Edwin comes over one night telling his mum that he's gone with his siblings to see some puppies around the corner. And he goes to her room and they are playing with the gun. And Edwin, who could just be a bit of a ninny at times, says, come on, let's play with the gun. And she takes the clip out and assumes that it's empty, holds it to his chest and pulls the trigger, not realizing there's one in the chamber. And she said to me, I didn't know anything about guns. I only knew that you shot them, that's all. But I thought if the clip was out, that was it. And so there's this moment where time cannot be turned back. And Edwin says, dude, you shot me. And she says, I'm sorry, dude. And then Edwin's eyes roll back and Edwin's, you know, breathing his last.
Mm. No one is punished in the shooting death of Edwin Rajo, and you point out that that, in a way, offered its own reward. Can you read for us the section about that?
Paradoxically, given that there's been no punishment, there has also been more forgiveness. Camilla went to Edwin's funeral. Her Facebook cover photo shows her sitting next to Edwin's grave, all in black, surrounded by flowers and balloons, smoking what looks like a joint. His sister and brother are cool, she says. But every time I'm with them, I know what happened. I feel bad because they don't have a brother no more. The only person I'm not cool with is his mum.
It's interesting that Edwin's mother also, looking back, she didn't wish that she had stayed in Honduras and never come to the States.
No, her feeling was, you know, this could happen anywhere. She didn't blame America for it. And then when I interviewed her, she was heavily pregnant and she had a boy and she called him Edwin.
Gary, you weave personal anecdotes from your own life throughout the book. How did your identity affect the reporting and the writing and whether and how people opened up to you?
Well, in terms of the writing, I mean, you bring yourself into these projects. I'm a small, kind of tubby, disheveled British guy who's black. You know, when people think British journalist, they're not thinking me. Generally, in my journalistic life here, and I worked in America for 12 years, just only returned to Britain last year, there is a moment of dissonance, you know, where people kind of have to rearrange their expectations. But by and large, people actually really wanted to talk to me. 10 children died that day, were shot dead that day. 7 black, 2 Latino, 1 white. And generally speaking, their deaths get precious little coverage. And so to have someone arrive and say, everything you'd like to tell me about your son, and they were all boys that day, I would like to hear. It gives them a sense that somebody cares, because when they actually were shot dead, it looked for a lot of them like nobody really cared.
Mm. A lot of the reporting was also on social media, and I was struck by the way this sort of culture of teen gun death does play out on Facebook.
Particularly Facebook and Twitter, for some of these kids, they're like online graveyards. Every couple of months, there's another RIP. For teenagers, certainly, surrounded by death in a way that would not be familiar to me beyond a war zone. It was quite incredible.
Gary, American teens are 17 times more likely to die from gun violence than their peers in other high-income countries. Did you know the book before you wrote it, or what
No.
did you come away with?
A few things that I came away with. The first was a realization that the parents of every black child had factored in the possibility that their child might be shot dead. Samuel Brightman's mother in Dallas says, I didn't think it would be him. I thought it would be his brother. Father in Newark says, you wouldn't be doing your job properly if you didn't think that your son could be shot dead as a black father. And then the other thing was the degree to which guns don't come up. If you ask the open-ended question, what do you think this is about? Guns don't come up. And I conclude that for some people in these areas, imagining a world without guns would be like if your child was run over and you tried to imagine a world without traffic. And in fact, at least with traffic, if you put up a stop sign or you wanted to put up a speed bump, no one would say it was unconstitutional. And so in the absence of any kind of conversation about guns that they can really seize on and imagine, they turn to other things. When you ask them about gun control specifically, most of them say it's crazy that they're so freely available and it's terrible and so on. But when you ask an open-ended question, guns don't come up. That did surprise me.
And do you think that's peculiarly American?
Well, in no other Western country in the world would this book be possible. I come from Britain, which has a range of problems and in a way has most of the problems that America has in terms of segregation, inequality, poverty, mental health. But the one thing it doesn't have on the top of that pile of tinder is guns.
Gary Young's new book is called Another Day in the Death of America, A Chronicle of 10 Short Lives. Gary, thank you.
Thank you.